My name is Nathan Rabb. I'm the president of the Rabb Collection. We deal in historical documents, letters, mostly from people who are world-renowned but have since passed away. I grew up in the region. This is a family business that was founded by my father, Stephen, and we still work together. It's a family father-son business, and I came into the business about a decade ago.
You have provided documents to the Library of Congress, the British Museum. Do you also have kind of a lending library or a collection?
Well, the line between a public institution and the private market and private collectors is not as divided as most people might think. Private collectors are philanthropically active. They lend and donate. Many of our clients are active, not only philanthropically in the sense that they give money, but in the sense that documents they buy from us might be on exhibit elsewhere. And then you see this sometimes if you're so inclined to look closely at the plaques that exist underneath the documents that are on display. It might say, you know, from this collection or that collection. We also loan documents, and at any given time we could have any number of documents on display, and we're always happy to entertain requests. The pieces are for sale, but that doesn't mean that while they're with us we can't make them publicly available.
Will you give me just kind of an example of the kinds of documents that you really specialize in?
We use a catch-all term, historical documents, which really can extend to any number of historical figures. And there are very few sectors, very few, you know, music, art, presidential, general historical, where we don't carry material that can come with varying frequency. We certainly have a large collection of presidential documents and documents from early American history. We have carried and do carry musical autographs and art autographs. When you think of art, I think of Cézanne, Van Gogh. We carry literary autographs. We have Mark Twain autographs, Hemingway. If, you know, musical notations in Mozart's hand were to come up, and I mention Mozart because of the great rarity of his autograph, that would bring a great deal of money, you know, certainly six figures and possibly seven figures. We've carried Beethoven material. And then there are tiers, and I say tiers not in the sense of importance or passing any judgment on their work, but in the sense of where the market perceives that value. So when you're dealing with someone like Bach or Beethoven, again, you're dealing with something of increasing rarity. I mean, you're not creating new ones. You know, these folks have long since passed away. And the pieces that are still available are either entering serious private collections, possibly being donated to institutions where they disappear forever from the market, or simple degradation. You know, these things, if they're not properly cared for, will deteriorate. And that's one of the things that we work with our clients on, which is to help them understand, how do I pass this on to the next generation? You see this a lot in the literary and the musical worlds, in the sense that the vast majority of correspondence that goes back and forth, that seems to surface, goes back and forth between agents and publishers, because they were constantly working to promote their works. You know, we think of them today as icons, but back then they were just trying to get their work out there. So here we're looking at a letter of Walt Whitman to the man who published Leaves of Grass for him. And this is pretty early. This is 1866. And dealing with payment for that publication, find a check for $25. He put up a lot of the money himself. And this is written when he was still in the Attorney General's office, which most people don't know that Walt Whitman worked in the Attorney General's office. And here you have a document of Ernest Hemingway to his publisher, granting him rights for live performances of Hemingway's work. So it's not a great surprise to find letters back and forth between figures in the literary and the musical worlds to people who helped publish their works, simply because there was so much of that correspondence and so much of it has found its way onto the market. And when you see this document relating to Chopin signed by members of Chopin's family, or the letter that we carried of Beethoven to his publisher dealing with the publication of one of his scores, that's often what you see. And to find anything that's more personal, that gives you insight into that person's character, that is uncommon, and that is often where you see these pieces go into the upper echelon of price. And so if you were to find a letter of Beethoven talking about his music, but not to his publisher, talking about how he composes his music or what music he enjoys most, that would be a lot more valuable than a simple letter saying, you know, enclosed is $20 for the publication of X, and, you know, all circumstances being equal. And that's why you see these scores of Mozart going from anywhere from several hundred thousand to several million dollars, and scores of Beethoven going higher than Simple Letters, because they connect the lover of music directly with the music of that person in that person's hand. If you were to find a Mozart autograph, in any context, it would be extremely valuable simply because of the scarcity of it. And there are a handful of people out there who are like that. You know, some of them are not well known. Button Gwinnett. I mean, I'm willing to bet if you stopped 1,000 people on the street, one of them will know who Button Gwinnett is. He is a signer of the Declaration of Independence from Georgia. And he's only famous for having signed that document. And he died shortly thereafter in a duel. But his autograph is very uncommon. So, although no one really cares much about the life of Button Gwinnett except for the signing of the Declaration of Independence, you can't buy a signature of his for under $500,000 because people put together collections of signers of the Declaration. And in order to have a complete collection, you need Button Gwinnett. There's only a handful of them out there. John Hancock signed a lot of stuff. Everybody knows him. Yeah. Everybody associates his signature with value. But he signed a ton of stuff. You know, I think we have 5 or 6 John Hancock documents right now. Abraham Lincoln signed a ton of stuff. I have 11 documents signed by Abraham Lincoln. What drives that value from being really almost, you know, nil, because the supply is certainly there, is there's such great demand. So I would say that of the people who put together collections of presidents who have the means to be able to afford an Abraham Lincoln document, and you know, now you're talking anywhere in excess of $10,000. All of them have a document signed by Abraham Lincoln. Whereas people who put together collections of signers of the Declaration of Independence, only a handful will be able to afford a Button Gwinnett.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.